We are talking once again with Joff Parrish, local writer and activist, here to give us a wrap-up of this past week's news. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
All right. Another week without Maria, as we reported last week. It's tax season. She is employed within the tax industry, so therefore she will be out for at least next week. I'm sure she'll be out, and we're hoping she'll come back sometime between now and June.
Yeah. So,
ideally, sometime still in April.
Yeah.
But things continue to happen, so
you still have me, unfortunately.
We still have you. Luckily, we still have you, because I understand you had a bumpy week, too, with your health issue.
Yeah. But I'm okay.
Okay, good. All right, well, then let's dive in, starting out with the Seattle Chamber of Commerce. Their CEO made an announcement this week.
Yeah, and it's in terms of election news, it's kind of welcome news that the new CEO there, a woman named Rachel Smith, has decided that they do not want to be in the business of funding campaigns for or against. So you'll remember that Amazon, via the Metropolitan Chamber's PAC, dropped $1 million plus last minute into the council races 2 years ago. They're not going to do that for the mayor or the two council seats that are up for election, or the city attorney that are all up for election later this year. So that's welcome news. Amazon presumably will find some other vehicle if they want to. But, you know, the chamber is not going to be rounding up money from other local businesses and pouring it into pro-business candidates, at least in the foreseeable future. And that's relatively good news, both for the mayor's race and for the two council seats that are up for election. So passing that along, that's we always like to start the show with some good news. Just kidding.
Well, I read a couple articles about it. Rachel Smith had done a piece for Public Cola, and then Seattle Times picked up, probably in parallel, picked up the same issue. You know, I think it's...
There was also something in the Puget Sound Business Journal.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, they're not going so dramatic as to dissolve the PAC. They're keeping the PAC, from what I can tell of the news reports. So it seems like it's just a temporary strategy. It's basically, I'll believe it when I see it, you know, when they get rid of the PAC. Sure. And we'll see how well this strategy goes. But I think they took so many hits last time around, in the last of the 2019 election, that it seems an interesting strategy to go, you know, this time we got beat up so bad that let's just back off, and maybe the other side will back off, and we'll level the playing field that way. Because right now they're kind of at a deficit from what they've done in 2019.
And Smith is a very political animal. She's worked in the past for King County and Sound Transit. She, of course, her predecessor, Marilyn Strickland, is now in Congress, so she's obviously a political animal as well. But that was a real miscalculation in terms of business community's relationship with the city. And, you know, the one thing that makes me think that this might stick for a while is that the chamber was also involved in drafting the Compassion Seattle initiative that Tim Burgess is pushing, where they did, in fact, invite in some homeless providers, you know, first responders, basically, for homelessness, to help in drafting that charter amendment. It's still flawed, as we talked about last week, but it is really a sea change from where the business community has been in the past. And I think Smith has had a lot to do with that. So hopefully this is another move in the same vein, and it will stick.
Well, she also has significant experience having having worked with Transportation Choices, and part of that revolving door of people who have been at Transportation Choices, like Rob Johnson, the current, I can't remember her name, the current deputy at the mayor's office.
Mm-hmm.
There's numerous people that have gone through that revolving door of transportation choices, King County, and the Chamber of Commerce.
Sure.
And the fact that also Rachel Smith, as mentioned by the Seattle Times, Rachel Smith is, I believe, the current partner of Tim Sice. So.
Oh, really? I didn't know that connection.
Well, I didn't know until 15 minutes ago or thereabouts.
I don't really keep track of Tim Sice's love life.
For
obvious reasons.
But I do read the articles that are put out there. And again, that was in the Seattle Times article that just came out today or last night. So she is very much a political animal, similar to her predecessor. But this time going, as you point out, looking to expand their strategy of working from multiple angles and neutralizing the horrible results that they got last time, last election.
Yeah, I it'll be very interesting to see how they follow up to this.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
Well, yeah, let's move on because there's kind of a tangent here. So light rail stations are opening up and the...
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. The three light rail stations at U District, Roosevelt, and Northgate that have been under construction pretty much since forever, actually since 2016, which doesn't necessarily sound like a long time, but President Obama was in office when they started building those things. So it will be very nice to see those finally open. That date is October 2nd. The U District station in particular at Brooklyn and 43rd will open just after UW resumes in-person classes. So that'll be good timing. And it will certainly be helpful for all the businesses in that neighborhood as well as the other two areas. So that's good news for people on the north side.
Yeah. Living close to the Roosevelt station and then having worked across the street from the university district location, I can tell you that's been 5 years of, or thereabouts, about 4 years total of devastation for a lot of businesses in that area.
Yeah, and the ones that survived that and survived the pandemic, I just left out a couple letters. They will benefit, but I think there's probably a lot of new businesses coming in to replace them with higher rents because it's near a light rail station, blah, blah, blah. Same thing we saw on the south side.
Right. Yeah, new businesses that tend to be chains and large corporations as compared to mom-and-pop shops.
Yep. So we'll see.
Yeah, so it's a double-edged sword.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's move on to this week's COVID developments.
Okay. Starting with local, Jay Inslee kind of pulled a fast one yesterday. He actually made more difficult. Let me back up. On Monday, the state will announce whether any counties need to regress from phase three to phase two. We talked last week about the state being part of a national fourth wave, that infections are increasing, hospitalizations are increasing, et cetera. And the real epicenter of that in the state is the Puget Sound area, Pierce, King, and Snohomish counties. So there's been some talk, as well as in Kitsap County, that the state might move them back from phase three to phase two. Well, Inslee quietly changed the metrics by which counties move back from phase three to phase two yesterday. It was that case counts or hospitalizations need to be increasing. Now he changed one word on that. Now both case counts and hospitalizations need to be increasing over a three-week period before the state will move back and, roll back its reopening plans. I think it's likely that King County will qualify anyway, as well as the other two counties in the immediate area, and maybe Kitsap as well. But we'll see. because that may force restaurants and bars once again to close to indoor dining. I think that would be a very good idea. We also got, this is actually national news, but we got an announcement this week from the CDC that the more contagious, more lethal British variant is now the most common form of SARS-CoV-2 in the United States, and that is true in Washington State as well. So the variants are with us. They are more contagious. If you have not been vaccinated, actually, even if you have been vaccinated, it is not time to stop wearing a mask, stop doing social distancing, or not wash your hands. All of those things still are needed to combat the virus and combat the pandemic. We're still in the middle of it, so don't relax yet. Speaking of the vaccines, however, King County announced this week that it has administered over 1 million shots of the COVID-19 vaccine just since December, which is fairly impressive. And the state announced once again that on April 19th, that is to say a week from Monday, all adults will be vaccinated. And this week the state opened up reservations for those shots. So get your appointment. There's quite a demand. As I understand it, it can be difficult to get a vaccine depending on where you go. A lot of pharmacies have them. Of course, medical clinics have them. And there's a couple large vaccination sites that have been set up, Lumen Field and one in South County. So go ahead and get your vaccine if you haven't already. And, let's try and get to herd immunity in King County, because that's what will stop the vaccine once and for all, or stop the pandemic virus once and for all.
Hmm. It sure seems like Jay Inslee is bouncing all over the place on his decisions and fudging the rules, and, it's...
I think he's getting a lot of pressure from business leaders to reopen, and so he's trying to balance that with the public health imperatives. And sometimes the public health imperatives don't win, and we've seen that repeatedly. I think the reopening happened too soon, as we're seeing now with the uptick in cases. Money talks, right? So that's what's happening here in much of the country, unfortunately. That's why the United States continues to have the worst pandemic numbers of any country in the world, by far. Because in this country, money talks. So, and then it didn't help that the previous president of the United States downplayed the virus and poo-pooed masks, and we're still seeing rallies around the country with people wanting to burn masks and that kind of nonsense. Which, you've still got a major political party that is decrying the pandemic as a hoax and pandemic restrictions as an impingements on freedom and all the rest of that nonsense. So, you can't cure stupid. And that is the second pandemic that we've seen in this country, along with the virus.
Well, just a matter of time before they come out with a cure for stupid. I keep reading.
Yeah, well, about 560,000 people that have been cured of stupid if they suffered from it in the first place. But a lot of them did. Now, in national COVID news, Joe Biden announced this week that April 19th, and again, that's a week from Monday, would be the day in which all U.S. adults should be eligible for vaccinations. The state of Washington had already made that announcement a couple weeks previous, so they were ahead of Biden in that case. Let's see. As I mentioned, the CDC has announced that the 117 variant first found in the UK is now the dominant virus, the dominant form of the virus in the United States. And we're seeing that in the fourth wave in a number of parts of the country. Particularly hard hit are the Northeast. And then the state of Michigan is getting hit once again. Hospitals in Detroit reporting shortages of ventilators, reminiscent of their problems with shortages of ventilators a year ago. So it's bad. It's bad out there. Now's not the time to relax. The CDC also announced new guidances again this week. Probably the most important of them is that you can stop compulsively cleaning everything. Not that that's a bad idea. It can just be expensive and time-consuming. So the CDC is saying it's almost impossible to get a virus from the contaminated surface. They put the odds of getting the virus, if the surface itself is contaminated with it, as less than 1 in 10,000. So, go ahead and start licking the surfaces. No, don't do that. And continue to be vigilant, because with the masks and the social distancing and the hand washing, because honestly, the British variant is a nasty piece of work, and you don't want to get it. I should mention also a study in Britain, speaking of the new variant there, that the British variant also likes kids. Kids under the age of 12 are much more likely to get the variant and spread it than adults are, controlling for everything else. So it doesn't seem like a great time to be mandating that schools reopen in-person classes, but that's what the federal and the state governments have done. So be very careful if you've got kids going to school also.
Yeah, also all this happening at the same time where the media is portraying the CDC as saying you're good to go if you want to travel again, which is not exactly what CDC has been stating, but, you know, once people see that as a headline, they're like, oh, great, you know?
Yeah, and also we got announcements from various cruise lines that they're going to try and restart cruises this summer. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, as if norovirus wasn't, you know, bad enough, let's throw in several others, too, to your cruise.
Sure. All you can get infected by at buffet.
All right. Anything else on COVID?
No. Oh, let's move to national news.
Okay. So, another week, this week, obviously, of the Chauvin trial.
Yeah, Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer on trial for killing George Floyd. This was week two of the prosecution's witnesses. They're probably going to wrap up their witnesses the beginning of next week, and then we'll see what the defense has to say. Yeah, in terms of cross-examination, their defense has not been very effective so far, I have to say. We heard from more cops testifying against Chauvin this week, and then we heard from a parade of medical experts, particularly the medical examiner for Hennepin County, where Minneapolis is. And they are all in agreement that, no, it wasn't the drugs in the system that killed George Floyd. It wasn't the heart disease that killed George Floyd. It was the guy putting his knee on George Floyd's neck. And, when you have multiple medical experts reinforcing each other's testimony and really dismantling the defense efforts to paint the cause of death as something other than Derek Chauvin, it was not a good week for the defense. And it was really a pretty damning week in terms of, describing the police behavior. What's really going to be interesting is what the jury does with this, and then what happens with the jury trials for the other three police officers who basically stood by, did nothing to impede Chauvin, but did hold back bystanders, including at least one trained EMT and other people who were saying, you're killing the man. Let me at least take his pulse. Let me at least try and give him CPR. And they were prevented from doing so by Minneapolis police. That kind of behavior, we'll see if they're held legally accountable for that. There's really no precedent for holding police officers accountable for that kind of behavior. But, hopefully this will set a precedent. It was really a very disturbing trial to watch. I watched, I've been watching parts of it for a couple of weeks, and the testimony is just wrenching. The guy, I know we're supposed to say allegedly, but the guy flat out murdered him. The anger of the community and the demonstrations that followed there and across the country look to have been understated. Not just justified, but it was worse than we thought.
All right, so the trial, you believe, is going to go to the jury next week?
The prosecution will finish next week. Okay. Then the defense, it's their turn. And I'm sure they'll call their own expert witnesses. The real question is whether they'll call Chauvin himself to testify. My guess would be probably not. Just about everybody has described him as completely emotionless during all this, and he's maintained that stance during the trial. And I don't think the defense particularly wants to let the jury see what a sociopath sounds like. For all the talk about what drugs were in George Floyd's system, I'd like to know what drugs were in Chauvin's system, because that sure sounds like roid rage to me. Steroids, meth, whatever he was on, he was not acting the way a normal human being would act.
All right. Okay. Anything else on that?
No, let's move on.
All right. Moving on to Mr. Matt, is it Getz?
Gates.
Gates.
Yes. The representative from Florida who's been a chief cheerleader for all things Trump for the last 4 years. He's in a lot of trouble. We talked about this last week, and it was major news again this week. He's now being investigated for at least 4 separate sets of crimes, the most serious of which is sex trafficking of a minor, because he was taking a 17-year-old on travels with him across state lines. He reportedly also allegedly was paying her for her sexual services in certain polite circles. That's called prostitution. They were also taking drugs together, allegedly, ecstasy, and Gates was doing that as well. That's a third set of legal problems. And then it turns out a whole separate line of investigation that Gates was conspiring with a fellow politico from Florida to run a candidate in a state legislative race in Texas so as to draw votes away from the Democrat in that race, paying that person to run. So that's a corruption charge. So Gates is in a whole lot of legal trouble, and he remains defiant, of course, because, he's in the mold of Trump. But we also got several other pieces of news on that investigation this week. One is that the person who turned the feds on to Gates, a former Florida state legislator named Joel Greenberg, who is a close friend of Gates and who was charged last summer with sex trafficking for the same, basically, sex ring. I wonder if they knew Epstein. He is said to be close, according to his lawyer, to pleading guilty. And that raises the question of whether he would testify against Gates, in which case game over. So that's one thing. Another thing is that Gates reportedly sought a preemptive blank pardon from Trump in the last days of Trump being in office, and Trump turned him down. I don't think it's because there are things that are too sleazy even for Trump, because, of course, these are the same sorts of things that Trump's been accused of for years and years. Maybe not the minor and the sex trafficking, but certainly the promiscuity. and, you know, non-consensual promiscuity. But Trump did not give him the pardon. That does indicate, though, that Gates either knew he was being investigated by the feds, which was green-lighted under Bill Barr, I might point out, or at minimum knew that he had a lot of legal exposure for his behavior. Now, it's not clear if he told the White House why exactly he wanted that preemptive pardon, but he didn't get it. So he is sort of out there twisting in the wind right now. And then the House Ethics Committee has also opened an investigation into him, which I might remind people whose eyes glazed over from all the Trump-era scandals that Gates has actually been sanctioned once before by the House Ethics Committee. That was when he tweeted something that could be construed against a threat against Michael Cohen's family. That was just before Cohen was set to testify to Congress. So Gates has been a piece of work in a lot of different ways, and a lot of people won't be sad to see him go. He's also been accused, credibly, by Republican colleagues of showing nude pictures of the of his female conquests to Republican colleagues on the House floor. So this guy's a sleaze bag all the way around. And we'll see, you know, how that investigation proceeds. But the steady drip, drip, drip is not how you want to manage this kind of scandal. And it seems like every day there's a new revelation because a lot of investigative journalists are now digging into his past.
So if he either resigns or is forced out, then how is his replacement chosen?
That would be a special election, but he says he's not going to resign. And, you know, it would take a majority vote of the Republican caucus to force him out. We went through this with Marjorie Taylor Greene a couple months ago, and they didn't hold her accountable, and it seems unlikely they would hold him accountable. So if he leaves office, it's probably because he's going to jail. And that might take a little while. But you know, we live in hope.
Let's move
He does seem to be a handy shorthand for just about everything that's wrong with the Republican Party right now. Seriously creepy.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add that would be FCC compliant, so...
Yeah, there is that problem.
So, moving on, significant defeat in Alabama this week regarding...
I actually disagree. It wasn't significant. You know, the Amazon unionization vote, Amazon won that vote, allegedly, but there have been so many complaints about Amazon interfering improperly with that vote in terms of, you know, lobbying workers on the job to vote no, that kind of thing. That's illegal. And the National Labor Relations Board, you know, is back in business after 4 years of basically doing nothing under Trump. There have been a ton of NLRB complaints, and I think it's very likely that that vote is going to be overturned the Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama will be allowed to have that vote again, under NLRB, monitoring. So, you know, the headlines today are really kind of misleading because I don't think that vote is going to be stand. I think it's going to be overturned and they're going to have to do the vote again.
Well, my understanding from, one of our local labor leaders is that if there is if the vote is overturned and there's another vote, that it would still be a couple years down the road before that vote took place.
Yes. So Amazon has bought some time by their bad behavior, which is a very Amazon thing to do, isn't it? It's a very Amazon thing to do, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes, it would take a couple years for that process to play out. Yes.
And meanwhile, Amazon continues to build facilities and build alliances across the U.S. I know they just this week for instance, announced that they're going to be building a giant new facility up in Arlington. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, big distribution center there. Largest in the state.
Lucky North Snohomish County.
So, again, you win a lot of hearts and minds in our current system by offering people jobs, at least temporarily, and everyone seems to forget, a la Boeing, when this state gave the historic tax benefits to them, you know, 10 years later, that doesn't appear to really be panning out very well for the state.
This is very true. I'm also remembering that giant empty factory down in DuPont that was given to, what was it? It was a tech company. I think it was Intel. They built it and, then they abandoned it. And that was that. Even though there was a massive amount of public taxpayer money underwriting it.
Well, even here in Seattle, there was a big bridge corridor built for one of the biotech companies that later went belly up.
Yep. In Interbay. Yep, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big biotech boom of 2000. Yep.
Yeah, and we're all cashing in on that today as we speak.
Yeah, we are.
So, yes, I agree with your summation that it perhaps wasn't as significant as portrayed in the media, but I still think it's a big blow, I think, to a lot of people that were scrambling and getting their hopes, again, that whole concept of hope.
Yeah. Well, and God knows there are a lot of other Amazon facilities around the country and around the world, for that matter, that that could use unionization. So.
Yes.
Amazon will fight it, and we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, having these votes single facility by single facility seems like a very difficult way to go about it. Yeah, exactly. Particularly since they can, you know, to some extent move the jobs around the country to different distribution centers.
Yeah.
I mean, and to some extent, it's geographically dependent. Right. So each distribution center has a particular geographic footprint, but those footprints can be adjusted.
Yes. Those boots can be moved to stand on other people.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to Arizona.
Arkansas. Yes. The Arkansas legislature, distinguished itself this week, I guess is the right word, by overriding a veto from their Trumpian Republican governor to overwhelmingly pass a bill that bans any kind of treatment for gender dysfunction, basically, for trans folks under the age of 18. This is going against science, not surprisingly. It's going against medical recommendations. But it does cater to transphobic voters. And that was a very sad human rights development in Arkansas this week. So, you know, if you're planning a vacation in the Ozarks anytime soon, don't. Simple as that. Don't. Don't go there. I guess that's all I have to say about that. It's a very disturbing development.
Mm. As are just numerous states, especially in the South currently.
Yeah, well, the thing getting most attention right now is the voter suppression bills. And of course, since Georgia's a fait accompli, we didn't really see any additional major companies coming out against those bills this week, which was disappointing. The big battleground that is expected to be next is Texas. And the Texas bill is in some ways even worse than Georgia's. It's very restrictive. It makes same day registration and drive up voting and some other things that are currently available. You know, it cuts those way back. You know, strengthens the already restrictive voter ID laws, et cetera, et cetera. And this is all being done in the name of the big lie that there was massive voter fraud in the last election, which there was not. But, you know, the dynamic in Texas is just a couple years behind Georgia at this point in terms of, changing demographics being likely to flip the state from Republican controlled to Democratic controlled. Already all the major cities in the state are heavily Democratic, particularly, you know, Houston, Dallas. Those are top 10, in the case of Dallas, top 5 metropolitan areas. San Antonio, Austin is now huge. El Paso, the Rio Grande Valley. These are all major metropolitan urban areas, and they're all heavily, heavily Democratic. And it's really only the votes of rural Texans that are keeping the state Republican right now, and they're about to be outnumbered, even with the gerrymandering that's happened in the state, which has been extensive. So the Republicans are doing what they can to try and hang on to power. This is all about power, and you know they could keep power one of two ways. They could keep power either by changing their ideology so it would appeal to more people, or they could change the electorate so that fewer people can vote, and especially fewer people can vote for Democrats. And that's what they're choosing to do in state after state after state. It's profoundly anti-democratic, and really we're seeing you know, half the country lose its democracy, lose its ability to choose who will make policy for the state. You know, if the Republicans do an awful job, they can stay in power, not because voters approve, but because voters don't have a choice. And that's the Republican strategy right now.
Which appears to be working.
It certainly worked in Georgia. You know, we haven't had any elections yet, and we'll see how many people can surmount the formidable hurdles and actually vote, and whether the state legislature then, you know, uses its trump card, both figuratively and literally, and voids the election if they don't like the results. Not just voids the election, but, you know, declares a different winner if they don't like the results. They reserve for themselves the right to do that in Georgia. That really is the most alarming of a number of alarming facets of that bill that was passed and signed into law, you know, a few weeks ago. Right. And there have been already several court challenges to it. So, you know, hopefully aspects of that bill, if not the whole bill, will be overturned in the courts. But that might take a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Moving on. Also this week, President Biden proposes a increase to the U.S. military budget.
Yeah, of 700 some million dollars. Now, mind you, this is on top of the steady increases under Donald Trump for the last 4 years. And that was on top of the steady increases over the last 20 years to the U.S. military budget. It's not particularly clear why the military needs all that money. But, you know, some of us have been saying that for a long, long, long time. Really since, you know, some bases were closed under Bill Clinton, people may be old enough to remember the peace dividend. You had to be both old enough and paying attention because it came and went in the early 90s very quickly. That was a theory that we could reduce the budget of the military now that the Soviet Union had dissolved and we no longer had the Cold War to worry about. You know, military contractors didn't like that, and so they lobbied to have it increased again, and so it's been increasing very steadily, thanks to companies like Boeing and, you know, Raytheon and all those other good military contractors. You know, this is really not a surprise. It's certainly disappointing given that Biden's been pretty good on a number of other fronts, but he was very hawkish in his years and years as chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He brought in a number of aides from his years as chairing that committee. And this was one of the primary objections to him as a candidate in the Democratic primaries. And once he became the nominee against Trump, it was, well, Trump's so awful that you just have to, hope for the best with Biden. And that's where we are. This is one of the downsides of Joe Biden, is that he loves him some military spending. And he has brought in aides who are also enthusiastic for military spending. And I can't imagine Congress is going to seriously object to his military budget either. We'll see how they respond to his proposal. Hopefully they don't add still more money to it, but that is something we will keep an eye on.
And you originally said 700 plus million. It's actually billion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
753, but imagine going back in time to the point where it was just at 700 million.
I think that was probably World War I. That would be my guess.
I was going to say it was before we're born.
Easily.
At least for me.
Easily. Yeah. No, I'm not that old either. Not that much older than you are. So it was a discouraging development this week. And of course, with all the other news, it didn't get that much attention because, this is a, dog bites man, who cares, kind of story. But it's not a surprise, but it does need to be noted. And, where possible, I'm sure the progressives in Congress will try and, whittle away at that, but I don't think they're likely to be successful any more than they have been in any other years.
And yet there are so many programs within the military budget that are clearly just jokes as to, planes, fighter jets that
We spent $40 billion on this plane. It doesn't work. Never mind. We're going to scrap that. The stories are just legion. Men who stare at goats, for God's sakes.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, there's plenty of money from the military budget that's going to be going towards our nuclear weapons system. And of course, we are, 20 miles from the largest collection of nuclear weapons in the Western Hemisphere.
Which we have noted before, but since we're basically the only media in Seattle that seems to care about that, yes, we are ground zero for nuclear weapons in North America. That's the Bangor nuclear subbase in Kitsap County. And it's not only 20 miles from Seattle, but it's 20 miles upwind from Seattle if anything happens. It's a precarious existence we live in here in the Northwest. And we have the military budget to thank for that. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I might mention that 700 some million dollars does not include the nuclear spending because that comes under the Department of Energy. So, go figure. So the nuclear sub-base at Bangor is military, but the actual nuclear weapons fall under the purview of the Department of Energy to manufacture and distribute them.
All right. Anything else on that?
And that brings us to Hanford, which is also a disaster area, literally.
Yes, the most toxic site in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
We really are, a world – they always talk about Seattle trying to make it a world-class city, and we're in a world-class state. I mean, we've got the most toxic waste. We've got the most nuclear weapons. We've got
– Hey, we're number
billionaires.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy. I don't know what will.
And Amazon has pretty much conquered the world at this point. They're working on space as we speak. Because they need new markets.
All right. Let's move on to more mass shootings this week.
Yeah, more gun violence. We had a mass shooting in Rock Hill, South Carolina, a former NFL football player who killed five people and then killed himself in Rock Hill, South Carolina this week. Once again, that didn't get a whole lot of attention, and I'm not sure why, other than it got crowded out of the news by all these other developments. Yesterday, we had another shooting in Bryan, Texas, which is northwest of Houston. Rock Hill is just south of Charlotte, North Carolina. And the shooting in Bryan was a disgruntled worker who opened fire and killed one person and wounded several others. So that is, doesn't even qualify as a mass shooting because only one person died. He also wounded a Texas State, I forget what they call them, Ranger or whatever it is, the state cops. So that got a lot of attention in Texas, but really not anywhere else. And then we also had a two-year-old video in Los Angeles that was finally surfaced as part of discovering a civil lawsuit. LAPD had been trying to suppress the video for 2 years. It was the body cam footage of an officer who was called to a domestic violence dispute and got to the address, saw a black guy taking out the garbage, black guy smiled at him, and he arrested the black guy, who turned out not to be the domestic violence call. Both the people who were arguing in that were white. So he just arrested the first black guy that he found and, you know, tackled him, roughed him up. The video really is sickening. I put it up on my Facebook feed earlier this week for anybody who caught it. But it really shows once again that policing in both Los Angeles and more broadly in the United States, certainly in Seattle, has an endemic culture problem. And the problem is that they see people of color, particularly black men, as automatically suspects. In this case, it was just some dude taking out his garbage. He got arrested and handcuffed and roughed up and tackled and all the rest of it. It was utterly mystifying and utterly appalling. And then once again, the gun violence that, we seem to be in mass shooter season, for people, often young men, you know, the football player who killed himself but killed five other people first, was an old man for this genre at 32, but he probably had some residual brain damage from his years playing football, honestly. He had reportedly been very depressed, et cetera, you know. I mean, you hear these stories over and over of what led to the shootings, and, it's mental health problems that don't go treated. It's easy availability of guns, and that's it. It's the availability of guns. You wouldn't be having, a half a dozen people at a time dying if it weren't for the easy availability of semi-automatic and automatic weaponry. And that is something that desperately needs to be addressed by Congress. And maybe it's time for the students to put together another huge march. Because we're in the season coming out of the pandemic where people feel like going out and being antisocial again.
Mm-hmm.
It is very sad.
All right. Any events coming up?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there is a rally tomorrow because the weather's finally turning nice again. And it's supposed to be the end of the week, by the way. A rally tomorrow to free Julian Assange. You may remember that he is still in Britain and still in under house arrest while the courts try and figure out if he can be extradited to the United States. The UK has been reluctant to do so because of the United States death penalty and because of the reasonable fear that the United States would try and prosecute Assange on, serious charges like, treason or something.
Now, mind you, the United States has plenty of other people it needs to prosecute for seditious conspiracy at this point, and that is moving forward. But Assange is still under house arrest in Britain, and really doesn't need to be. Journalism isn't a crime. And what Assange...
he's in very poor health.
Yeah, he is. And hasn't had access to good medical care and all the rest of it. So yeah, he's in bad shape. And, you know, the things that the United States wants to charge him with are, you know, revealing state crimes, which used to be called journalism. Now, mind you, you know, he was originally prosecuted under the Obama administration. So the fact that Trump is no longer in office really doesn't change the dynamic, because Biden will likely want to prosecute him as well. I haven't seen anything from the Biden people about Assange, but, you know, it's in the Department of Justice's hands, and that does not seem to have changed. And we're in, you know, month three, so I don't think it's likely to at this point. So that rally, anyway, will be tomorrow at...
Tomorrow
being Sunday, the 11th of April. And it will be at 12 noon. It is at 12 noon at City Hall Park, which is 3rd and Yesler in downtown Seattle, by the King County Courthouse Administration Building, all that.
Okay, so 12 noon, Sunday, April 11th.
Yes. And I also might mention that April 11th is a national day of rallies for White Lives Matter, which is being put together by various neo-Nazis. I'm not sure if there's anything that is happening in Seattle, but keep an eye for that, because that needs to be confronted and rejected wherever possible.
Wow. All right.
I might add that that does not seem like a very organized effort, not surprisingly.
So, on that, we are out of time, and we will look forward to talking with you again this same time next week.
Sounds like a plan. I'll bring more material.